We hear the train before we can see it. A low hum, a rumble underfoot, a deep-throated whistle, faint at first and then louder as the train gets close. We crane our necks to look down the track, even as one of our sponsors, Mrs. Scatcherd, shouts in her reedy voice, "Children! Places, children!" And suddenly here it is. A black engine looming over us, shadowing the platform, letting out a hiss of steam like a massive, panting animal. I am with a group of 20 children, all ages. We are scrubbed and in our donated clothes, the girls in dresses with white pinafores and thick stockings, the boys in knickers that button below the knee, white dress shirts, neckties, thick wool suit coats. It is an unseasonably warm October day, Indian summer, Mrs. Scatcherd calls it, and we are sweltering on the platform. My hair is damp against my neck, the pinafore stiff and uncomfortable. In one hand I clutch a small brown suitcase that, excepting the cross, contains everything I have in the world, all newly acquired. A Bible, two sets of clothes, a hat, a black coat several sizes too small, a pair of shoes. Inside the coat is my name, embroidered by a volunteer at the Children's Aid Society. Neave Power. Yes, N-I-A-M-H. Pronounced Neave. A common enough name in County Galway, and not so unusual in the Irish tenements in New York, but certainly not acceptable anywhere the train might take me. The lady who sewed those letters several days ago tisked over the task. "I hope you aren't attached to that name, young miss, because I can promise if you're lucky enough to be chosen, your new parents will change it in a second." My Neave, my da used to call me. But I'm not so attached to the name. I know it's hard to pronounce, foreign, unlovely to those who don't understand. A peculiar jumble of unmatched consonants. No one feels sorry for me because I've lost my family. Each of us has a sad tale. We wouldn't be here otherwise. The general feeling is that it's best not to talk about the past, that the quickest relief will come in forgetting. The Children's Aid treats us as if we were born the moment we were brought in, that like moths breaking out of their cocoons, we've left our old lives behind and, God willing, we'll soon launch ourselves into new ones. Mrs. Scatcherd and Mr. Curran, a milquetoast with a brown moustache, lines us up by height, tallest to shortest, which generally means oldest to youngest, with the babies in the arms of the children over 8. Mrs. Scatcherd pushes a baby into my arms before I can object. An olive-skinned, cross-eyed 14-month-old named Carmine, who I can already guess will soon answer to another name. He clings to me like a terrified kitten. Brown suitcase in one hand, the other holding Carmine secure, I navigate the high steps into the train unsteadily before Mr. Curran scurries over to take my bag.
"Use some common sense, girl," he scolds. "If you fall, you'll crack your skulls, and then we'll have to leave the both of you behind."
The wooden seats in the train car all face forward, except for two groups of seats opposite each other in the front, separated by a narrow aisle. I find a 3-seater for Carmine and me, and Mr. Curran heaves my suitcase onto the rack above my head. Carmine soon wants to crawl off the seat, and I am so busy trying to distract him from escaping that I barely notice as the other kids come on board and the car fills. Mrs. Scatcherd stands at the front of the car, holding onto 2 leather seat backs, the arms of her black cape draping like the wings of a crow.
"They call this an orphan train, children, and you are lucky to be on it. You are leaving behind an evil place, full of ignorance, poverty, and vice, for the nobility of country life. While you are on this train, you will follow some simple rules. You will be cooperative and listen to instructions. You will be respectful of your chaperones. You will treat the train car respectfully and will not damage it in any way. You will encourage your seatmates to behave appropriately. In short, you will make Mr. Curran and me proud of your behavior."
Her voice rises as we settle in our seats.
"When you are allowed to step off the train, you will stay within the area we designate. You will not wander off alone at any time. And if your behavior proves to be a problem, if you cannot adhere to these simple rules of common decency, you'll be sent straight back to where you came from and discharged on the street, left to fend for yourselves."
The younger children appear bewildered by this litany, but those of us older than 6 or 7 had already heard a version of it several times at the orphanage before we left. The words wash over me.